Thank you so much for that. The author of those very fine words, Reverend Fred Small, has begun a new ministry this fall at the First Parish Union Church in Cambridge, Massachusetts, after serving our congregation down here in Littleton for about the past 5-6 years. Certainly want to wish Fred, as I know we all do, wish him the best in his new ministry with his congregation there. And as always, thank him for this wonderful gift that he's given to our Union movement with this song that we just heard. About 3 weeks ago, an article ran in the New York Times with a rather intriguing title. His death postponed, a minister repeats his farewell sermon. I don't know who the headline writer for that day was, but that was a pretty good one. The opening line read, "The Reverend Forrest Church gazed out from his pulpit on Sunday and in a steady voice delivered what may or may not be his last sermon for the fifth time." The event being covered by the Times was the observance of Forrest's 30th anniversary as the minister of the Unitarian Church of All Souls in New York City. What made it newsworthy, in addition to Forrest's 30-year ministry with one of New York City's more prominent congregations, was he was still alive when it happened. Forrest is only 60 years old. At the age of 63, I am entitled to use the phrase, only 60. And it was 2 years ago this month, and I know I've mentioned that from the pulpit here before, it was 2 years ago this month that he was diagnosed with terminal esophageal cancer. And then there was a period of remission where it looked like he might have beaten the odds, only to have the cancer reemerge last spring with no doubt this time as to where it is leading. And yet, Forrest keeps on keeping on, chemo treatments and all. Others on the All Souls ministerial team have taken over the day-to-day workings of the church, with Forrest preaching on occasion when his energy permits. While he may have lost a good deal of weight and much of his hair, Reverend Church has not lost his trademark sense of humor. Nor has he lost his voice, even with the removal of his esophagus. And as he stood up to deliver his 30th anniversary remarks to his congregation back on September the 28th, he said to them, "After 2 or 3 poignant farewell sermons, I'm almost embarrassed this morning to be seen in public upright." It's always good to know somebody can make light of things even as they're approaching their end. Some of you are very familiar with this member of the clergy and friend of mine, ministerial colleague with whom I'm speaking. I've been privileged to have his friendship for nearly 30 years myself. If you've been listening to me over the years, you know I draw quite liberally on his voluminous writings in many of my own sermons. And yet I'm sure others of you are hearing his name for the first time right now. Just give you a little bit of a nutshell as to who it is I'm talking about here. Forrest can rightfully claim, whether he actually does so or not, to be the most prominent spokesperson for liberal religion and for Unitarian Universalism in the late 20th and early 21st centuries. He is the son of the late Senator Frank Church, who during the 1970s was one of the more powerful members of the United States Senate and made a serious run for the presidency in the 1976 primary, which was eventually won on the Democrat side by Jimmy Carter. Forrest has published 24 books on various aspects of liberal religion. He's been a frequent guest on radio and television programs when a clear and articulate spokesperson for the liberal side of religion is called upon. Our Unitarian Universalist Association's Executive Vice President, Kay Montgomery, has rightly called him the most quoted Unitarian Universalist of this era. During his ministry at All Souls, the church is on Manhattan's Upper West Side, I think it's at Madison and Lexington, Lexington and 80th Street, rather. During his ministry there, the congregation has grown from some 400 to 500 members one of the largest in our UU Association, now with a little over 1,300 members. Forrest's 24th and presumably last book that he'll publish is titled Love and Death. And I'm using both the title and some of its contents as the basis for my sermon this morning. I'll also be drawing upon an address he gave at the last summer's UU General Assembly in Fort Lauderdale when this book was presented to our UU community. It is not for me to know, really, what goes on in the deepest recesses of Forrest's heart, mind, and soul. That's for him, his wife, his now grown children, and his closest friends to attend to with him. But I found some of his public musings on his impending demise to be quite remarkable for their insight. I just want to pass along some of the ones that I have found, that I found especially helpful and good for me at this point in my life, in the hope that you will derive from some meaning from them as well. I'm going to begin with where he speaks about getting to acceptance in terms of seeing his death approaching, and then how he distinguishes between what he calls unfinished business and ongoing business in the face of that. This is from his General Assembly address. The lesson here is simple yet profound. We cannot embrace our life fully until we find a way to accept our death. Don't get me wrong. I am not happy about the prospect of dying. I have things to do with my life and regret the interruption of all my splendid plans. My acceptance, however, abides in a deeper place. I am free to die because although I have ongoing business, I have no unfinished business. And he goes on to explain this difference he is drawing between ongoing and unfinished when he gets to the part where he says that he realized that just acceptance on his part, vital as necessary as that was to him personally, was not enough. Of his wife, Carolyn, he says, "She reminds me by her very presence and concern that my death isn't my own to do with as I please." And when it comes to his children, he is reminded they have their own unfinished business to attend to. Business with me. They need to say things they had not said, show me things about themselves I'd missed. And so he concludes, mere acceptance is too easy, too selfish. The network of relationships which binds us and sometimes entangles us with each other has its own moral demands that we cannot meet on our own, only together. And so in attending to this unfinished business with those whom he loved the most and who most loved him, he says, it was difficult, bracing, humbling, and yes, sobering, but finally healing. A healing that touched from soul to soul. I appreciate that distinction, ongoing and unfinished. For no matter how long any of us may live, we're going to bow out with ongoing business. In fact, I would think the only way to avoid that would be to live a life completely devoid of ambition or aspiration or hope. All our lives end in the middle of a story, as Forrest says. And there's really little we can do about the remaining ongoing business of our lives, unless, as I just said, there's no story to our lives at all. But we can, if we so choose, do something about the unfinished business in our lives. We can make peace with those where peacemaking is called for, or reaffirm our love with those where such reaffirmation is needed. So Forrest concludes this piece of it on this note. The courage we need comes before our dying. When we face our own demons and reach out across a great divide to touch hands. You know what your unfinished business is. Don't wait until it's too late to begin taking care of it. Death may come as a thief in the night, but it cannot steal from you the love you have given away. And so his underlying point in all this, with which I fully concur, is that salvation, and salvation here in the sense of knowing personal peace and reconciliation, salvation comes only in this life and not in an alleged life to come. I like the way Reverend Church puts it. Being an agnostic about the afterlife, I look for salvation here, not to be saved from life, but to be saved by life, in life, for life. So what I take from this is that I accept the fact that I and all of us will have ongoing business when your life reaches its end, but try to settle as much of your unfinished business as you can before that time arrives. That's the first major insight I take from my longtime friend and colleague. Another one came to me as I read the opening paragraphs in the book, the opening paragraphs of one of the chapters in this book, which was titled Trap Doors. I'll give you the lesson first, then read you the story that's behind it. The insight is, we can only truly love that which we know we must someday lose. The story behind this one is a bit long, but I'm going to read it. It really touched me. Hope it does the same if I can put it across as I read it myself. This is a story he writes about with his children back when they were children, before they reached the early adulthood stage that they are now. My children helped teach me this lesson. One day we were almost killed, crossing the street right in front of our apartment building. I was walking them to their last day in school, three quarters of the way across with the light in our favor, and all of us dutifully holding hands, a car burst out of nowhere, hurtling around the corner at breakneck speed, ricocheting off the curb, and swerving into our path. Missing us by inches, the car skidded, fishtailed back into control, and disappeared down the avenue. I could barely breathe, my heart beating like a pile driver. In stark contrast, my kids just laughed, romping blithely down the sidewalk, jumping from tree to tree, as they always did, trying to touch the leaves. Deeply shaken, I did the obvious thing. I got angry. Not at the driver, she was long gone. I vented my anger on the children. Did you see that car? It could have killed us. It almost hit us. It really did. We all could have been killed. But neither of them had done anything wrong. They were holding my hands, walking with the signal. I had nothing to teach them. Only this, perhaps. Our lives are beset with trap doors. Whenever the ground seems most secure, something out there has its hand on the lever. A massive coronary embolism, a drunk driver. When a trap door swings, we haven't time for regrets or second chances. It just happens. Swoosh. No goodbyes. But trap doors have one saving grace. They add to our appreciation of life, even as they threaten to extinguish it. Later that very day, walking my children home from school, they looked different to me. More vulnerable and precious. As we talked about their last day in school and summer plans, I loved them desperately. It reminded me of something I have to struggle to remember even today. Life is not a given, but a wondrous gift. That gift comes with a price attached. One day something will steal it from us. That doesn't diminish our lives, it increases their value. Fragility and importance ensure life's preciousness. We can only love that which we know we must one day lose. It took a trapdoor trembling beneath my feet and a crazed woman casting the shadow of death across my family's path to awaken me once again to the wonder of life and the blessings of love. My kids had the right idea. We had just escaped from a brush with death. Why didn't I think to jump and touch the leaves? Fragility and impermanence ensure life's preciousness. We can truly love only that which we know we must someday lose. Now, knowing that and really getting it, as I think I do, does not, for me anyway, make death any more inviting or desirable. But it does force upon me the truth that death is necessary if we are to know what is truly precious to us and what or who it is we truly love the most. For nothing that we have, be it material goods, be it our most cherished relationships, or our most meaningful experiences, are ours forever. That this is all transient and impermanent, though, does compel us to pay attention to what we find most precious and to all we choose to love. Trap doors have one saving grace. They add to our appreciation of life, even as they threaten to extinguish it. For the third and final insight, I take the Forest Farewell thoughts of writings, is one I know I've expressed many times from this pulpit. For when Kay Montgomery noted that Forrest is one of the most quoted Unitarian Universalists of our era, she may have had one particular quote in mind. It's the definition of religion that he put forth in one of his earliest published writings, and one that has come in many ways to define in a kind of elevator speech fashion what we Unitarian Universalists mean when we use the term religion. Many of you know it. Religion, according to Forrest, is our human response to the dual reality of being alive and having to die. Now, it's one thing to know that and put it forward in sermons and books. At his General Assembly address, Forrest spoke of his oft-quoted definition from the most personal of places. While it cannot be conclusively proven, I'd say it's a pretty good bet that we human beings are the only species on Earth who live with an ongoing awareness of our mortality. And even if, I can't prove that, but I can take a good guess at it and say that even if some of the higher animals may have some sense of the fact that they will someday die, I feel quite safe in saying that we are the only creature who seeks some meaning in our mortality. I mean, maybe a horse does know that it's going to die someday. But even if he does, I kind of doubt that means this horse goes around speculating about what it means to be a horse. Probably just figures, I'm a horse. What else do you want from me? But here's Reverend Church again. Death is central to my definition of religion. Knowing we must die, we question what life means. The answers we arrive at may not be religious answers, but the questions death forces us to ask are at heart religious questions. Where did I come from? Who am I? Where am I going? What's life's purpose? What does it all signify? Think about it for a moment. If you had an eternity to live, would these questions have any kind of meaning for you at all? If you knew you could always think about and act on such questions tomorrow, and you knew as well that you had an endless supply of tomorrows, why bother facing any of them at all? After all, think of it this way. Would you ever study for an exam if you knew it was going to be perpetually postponed? It is this definition and understanding of religion that also reminds me of why I became a Unitarian Universalist and a UU minister. It was because I needed a place where I could be religious and could at least try also to be a religious leader. For these fundamental questions, which Forrest quite rightly calls religious questions, could be pursued without a preset or prepackaged set of answers. Above and beyond all the things that we do and encompassing all the many great and wonderful things that we do here in this community, it is our mission and our purpose to offer a community where these questions, religious in the best sense of the word, can be explored, and where the various answers the various ones of us have come to can be shared. My role in all of this is to offer for you the answers that I have found for myself to these questions, not because they necessarily have to be yours, but so you will hopefully be prompted to find your own. I don't claim this approach to religion and being a religious community works for everyone. I just know it works for me, and hopefully for those who come into our midst. We are each given a life, one in which William Blake reminds us joy and woe are woven fine. We seek to offer a community here in which the joys and the woes of our lives may be brought forth, and where meaning may be found in both. So I'm going to go one more brief round with Forrest from his GA address as a way of bringing these thoughts to a close. After running for a bit with that off-sided definition of religion of his and how
it finally got home to him,
Reverend Church says,
"Death is not life's goal, only life's terminus. The goal is to live in such a way that our lives prove worth dying for." This is where love comes into the picture. The one thing that can't be taken from us, even by death, is the love we give away before we go. Or as the other community minister whom we already heard from and took note of, Fred Small, "The only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're gone." So think on these things. Maybe you, like Forest Church, are an agnostic when it comes to the afterlife. But you can be an agnostic about the afterlife, as I happen to be myself, and still believe in immortality. If the love you leave behind when you're gone is greater and even more lasting than your earthly life, and if others whose lives you touch, keep passing that love along, then that may well be all the immortality that you or I will ever need. With these thoughts in mind, let's sing our closing hymn, "There Is More Love Somewhere."